Hey, everybody, welcome to the Green Divas radio show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
And Green Diva Lynn.
Woo! Anyway, yeah, we're psyched because you know what? Earth Day's coming.
And yes, it is.
You know,
every day's Earth Day, as they say.
But that's the thing. Like, I get a little cynical because I'm like, okay, people, you know, we do this every day, every week. But it is kind of a cool day of focus and getting everybody to really, you know.
It's a celebration.
It is. And it's a busy time for a Green Diva. It's sort of like Green Diva tax season. If you were an accountant.
Did you say taxis?
Tax season.
Oh!
That's funny. Okay. Taxis, tax season, same thing. No, you know what I mean. If I was an accountant,
right.
It would be my tax season. It's the Green Diva's tax season.
Yeah, everything ramps up.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're doing some fun things. We're going to be meeting Bill Curtis and John St. Augustine of Earth Matters and spending some time with Mike Novak.
Yeah, which means that I'll be traveling to Chicago for Earth Day, which is kind of exciting for me.
I know. And you're staying with Green Diva Allie.
I know. With
right across the street from me.
My gardening gal. So I'm going to get some lessons. I'm going to wander around her garden and ask questions.
I know. Well, she's out there today.
So, you know, it's like my email box is filling up with all kinds of cool Earth Day things. Of course, a lot of them are just products, but they're not just products. I mean, there are some interesting things, and I'm glad that people are doing stuff, but we're getting to talk to some amazing folks. And we're really – today I had a chance to talk to Maria Rodale, and for – you know, people know the name Rodale, right? I mean, her grandfather really was the grandfather and the founder of the organic food movement.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that talked about the soil and what it means and what happens to the soil and why it's so important for sustainable agriculture. So she comes from this lineage of that, and we had a really great conversation. And one of the things she's kind of wanting people to focus on is gratitude for the earth, this Earth Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really, really like that. And of course, today happens to be the launch of their new magazine. And I have it in my notes here. Hang on. Organic.
Rodale's Organic Life.
Thank you. Bing, 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 bing. Which I'm supposed to go to New York tonight for the big thing. But I think that I'm definitely going to be meeting with her soon, and they're going to send us copies so we can get our hands on it.
Yeah, that'll be fantastic.
Yeah, and I just really like her philosophy. So that was a really rich conversation, which you all will get to hear later in this show.
Well, and I didn't realize that Rodale Books published Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth.
Yeah, Rodale Book, they're like
pretty huge.
See,
that's what kicked it off for me.
Yeah,
when my son was a baby, it was watching then that film.
Yeah,
that really was the catalyst. Going on the environment.
Well, being a recovering publisher, I had always kind of had my eye on Rodale. Like, wow, you know, I had sort of like publisher envy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really exciting for me on that level, which not everybody relates to, but you know, hey, it's me.
I can.
So you coughed up your a furball.
The hairball.
No, you gave up your GD My Earth 360 time for Mark Terry, who's doing some really interesting things.
I just love him and what he does.
I know. So he's getting ready for the big Paris UN summit in November, but what they're doing now is with the youth climate
report,
thank you. They're putting a call out for students around the country, around the world. They really want to, you know, around the world to do these films, and because they're putting them together, they're knitting them together for this summit to do one really cool film about what's happening in research from, you know, and student researchers, student filmmakers.
Right. And they have an interactive map of where these interviews are coming from. And if you click on the location, you'll be able to pull up that interview from, it could be a remote island, it could be somewhere in Australia, whatever.
Pretty darn
very cool. Yeah.
So, yeah, we've actually, you know, been invited to go help him out there in Paris. No kidding. so I'm like, okay, Mark, we're gone. We might help, you know, because they're going to present this film to all these different countries, have their own rooms or whatever they are, you know. I'm not making any sense anymore. Booths, maybe, yeah. So, but they do these presentations for the various countries represented, and they need a lot of people to help. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't really have too much of a problem going to Paris.
I think we can handle it.
I think I can do that.
We can do that. So,
and it would be so exciting to be there at the summit. I mean, that would be a huge thing.
Well, it is. It's a big one.
With.
It's a particularly big one.
That gives me chills to even think about it.
Yeah. So there's a lot of reasons why we need to go there, but I think we can be involved. So then we have Marcy Zaroff calling in.
Right.
She's talking about how to make, you know, a sustainable spa experience in your own home and how to bring those elements into your home. And
yeah, it's kind of difficult in my home because I don't really want to be sitting in a bath that's in my 14-year-old son's bathroom.
I know. The only bathtub in my house right
now. I don't feel like I'd be having a luxurious time doing
that. Yeah, no. The only bathtub in my house has, like, you know, toys and rubber duckies and, yeah, not happening. But I think she was talking more even about, like, textiles and and
just
bringing in organic fabrics and, you know, how to begin to really do that, to, you know, create a safe, non-toxic environment in your own home.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice conversation.
Okay.
And then, of course, we talked to John Platt again.
He's a good guy.
He really is, about the extinction clock, which was really upsetting, scary.
It's not moving very fast.
Yeah, you know, I'm afraid that, you know, that there are some things. In fact, I did talk today, but you won't hear the interview today with Wynn Paris about the elephants, and the statistics are so terrifying. Anyway, so, but he's a great guy with a lot of good information. So, you know, I'm excited to come to Chicago.
Yeah. What is that, a segue?
Not really. I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, no, I'm excited to come to Chicago, and I wanted to just tell everybody.
Stop the clock.
That Earth,
stop the extinction clock.
Yeah, that and
time travel.
Earth Day is our deadline for funding GDGD Radio.
Yes, it is. That's a different clock.
And
that was a good segue.
Yeah, we only have, you know, we only need like $47,000 more dollars. And then Lynn will it's not a big thing. Come on, how many people are listening? We know there's a lot of you. Dig a little bit and maybe share $10 and make a difference, you
something.
Know. Because it's
a cool T-shirt.
Well, and you can,
we even had Egg Begley has a T-shirt of ours.
I know.
He wore it. He's got it. We've got a picture of us with him.
I know.
All of us wearing this T-shirt.
Yeah, he's cool. Makes me feel
and
special.
The T-shirt's cool.
You know,
Ed, are you wearing the shirt today?
Yeah, right. And well, Ed's going to be on our show next week for the Special Earth Day show. But I just really want to say thank you to all those who do support us and express our gratitude for, because we do have some diehard, wonderful fans and supporters and partners and alliances. And we are very grateful. But, you know, if you haven't given or contributed, go to GDGD, fundgdgd.com. And, you know, if we can get to our goal, then Lynn will run naked through Chicago with a little body paint, maybe a thong, you know, something like that. It should be.
I hope we just come a little short of our goal.
Yeah. All right, people, great show coming your way. Listen up.
Every Green Diva needs a sidekick. At the Green Divas radio show, they're called Green Dudes. Time now for a deeper shade of green from a guy's perspective.
Well, back again with one of our favorite green dudes, Mark Terry, who he's a filmmaker. He's an explorer. He's now working on a master's, and I don't know exactly what in, but he mentioned something called digital humanities, which I think is so cool, and I want to go take that course. So he's working on the Youth Climate Change Report film that's coming up, and Let's say hi to Mark and find out what that's about. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Megan. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, likewise.
So tell me first what this is all about, this whole digital humanities thing you're kind of involved in.
Yeah, it's a very interesting new form of academic study that's relatively new, about 3 or 4 years old. But one of the aspects of it is basically approaching the humanities through the digital domain and introducing new technologies to study the humanities. And one of these technologies that I came across was a new app that Google has created called Fusion.
Yeah.
And Fusion is basically a way of taking a Google World Map and bringing together various media like photographs and video and links and embedding them all into pinpoints on this map.
Wow.
And so I'm using this new technology for the Youth Climate Report this year.
All right.
Just to make the information a bit more accessible to the delegates at the Climate Summit in Paris this year.
Wow, I want to go.
Yeah.
I want to go to Paris. I want to play with, because you described to me that there's going to be a giant touch screen with a map, and you can hit one of the pins in the map representing a student or whoever, a filmmaker, and their film pops up?
Well, that's it. You know, you're going to see this giant map on a big flat screen mounted on the wall. And the pins will represent different places around the world. And the places represent where specific climate research is being done or where the organization or university of the climate researcher is based.
All right.
And then you hit that, and then the video that's been collected by us will play.
So
you can see firsthand what kind of research is being done in that area.
So cool. So what the Youth Climate Report film, these are young people that are going out and talking to researchers and finding out what they're doing and what they're learning, right?
Yeah, that's right. We're actually in our sixth year now. We've been in partnership with the United Nations Environment Program since then. And basically what we've been doing every year is getting student reporters around the world to interview their local climate scientists and shoot a video that basically shows the new information, the new findings that these researchers are working on. And then we combine all those videos together in a feature film that we show to the delegates and policymakers at the United Nations Framework Conventions on Climate Change.
Well, that's got to kind of keep somewhat of a hopeful, inspiring environment. You know, I mean, so much of the news is kind of a bummer, but when you have kids that are excited and they want to learn and they're out there filming this stuff, it must give some people some hope and some encouragement that at least the next generation coming up is, you know, paying attention.
Well, that's right. And the young people really want to get involved. They just don't know how.
Yeah.
You know, they can't walk into the UN and necessarily have a voice, right? But a project like this gives them that voice.
Wow. And I'll tell you, some of those films we saw from last year, the ones that were submitted, were fabulous, really clever.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Yes, we have a very, very talented young filmmaker who's serving as the director of the film, and that's Ray Coker.
Okay.
He's a very young man, just in his early 20s, and he has an innate ability to make the information very accessible to everyone. And I think that's one of the key things about the Youth Climate Report is you got to remember that the policymakers at the UN, they're not scientists. They're just regular people.
Yeah.
So, you know, to go through a very thick scientific text is relatively difficult for them.
Yeah.
But seeing a film, you know, the visual medium itself makes the information accessible. But having a young person serve as the reporter, the actual scientist is speaking to a young person. So they end up making their information more accessible to them.
Right, right.
So that helps as well.
Well, plus I think, I don't know, but somehow when young people are, this is really their world that you know, it's their world coming, you know. And so it gives it a little bit more weight when you think about that this is their world and they want to know what's happening. And I think it's inspiring for me, anyway, to know that there are kids in the upcoming generation that really care and are out there, Yeah.
Oh, and care is the right word. They really, really care, especially this year when, you know, the binding agreement of COP21 is going to come out of the Paris conference. We have so many young people all over the world who are actually submitting videos already.
Wow.
Like, we're about 6 or 7 months ahead of schedule, and we got about 24 films.
Isn't that nice? Now, tell me what the COP21 is for anybody who doesn't necessarily know.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's basically conferences that want to amend and upgrade and update the Kyoto Protocol. It started 21 years ago, and the COP stands for Convention of Parties.
Okay.
And the Convention of Parties meet every year through what's known as the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change.
Okay.
And everyone gets together and brings the new scientific data that policy is based on, and it gets added to resolutions in each year's respective accords. I was just going to say, and this is the legislation that we get internationally when it comes to climate change.
Okay, so that creates the international standards, right?
Yeah,
laws. Now, tell me, when is this happening in Paris?
This year it's going to take place from November 30th to December 11th.
Oh, so we have time to get there?
I know, we got lots of time. But the good thing is getting as many videos as we can now.
Okay.
Helps make more of that information available via video to the policymakers, and that's the medium they prefer.
So you are still calling for young people to submit videos. Great.
Absolutely. We do have a call for videos, and we want students all over the world to find their local climate scientists and interview them. In particular, one issue is quite strong this year with the policymakers, and that's reforestation.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that seems to be a priority this year, and being such an important year, that's obviously a key point to cover.
Now, didn't the UN declare it the year of soil?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Absolutely, but since trees play such a big part in our natural eco-cycle, it's something that's relatively cheap. We don't have to ban substances. We don't have to, invent new cars. You know, we simply have to plant some new trees.
Yeah.
And it kind of takes care of itself a little bit.
It seems kind of like low-hanging fruit, no pun intended.
Exactly.
You know, like, this is doable. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So you'll be going to Paris, and hopefully and how many students do you pick? Or how many films do you pick from the ones submitted?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question, because each video is to be about 3 to 5 minutes long.
Okay.
And collectively, they equal a 45-minute film.
Wow.
So I guess that's about 10 videos that go into the actual film.
Yeah.
Now, because we have this new map, this Google Fusion map, what we're able to do is include every single video that is sent to us.
Okay, good.
So anybody that makes a video, they will not be excluded from the conference.
Oh, I want to make a video, but I'm not that young.
That's okay.
Let's be honest. I just want to go to Paris.
There you go.
Okay. I'm going to keep working on that. And really, I'm so thrilled for this work that you're doing. And are you doing any other of your own films right now?
No, this is such a big year that we decided to focus solely on this.
All right.
And I'm trying to recruit students in far off countries. Like, I got a group in Russia that's working on this.
Neat.
And trying to get some countries that haven't been represented in the past, like, Saudi Arabia and Australia. There's a lot happening there, so we're looking for those students.
Well, Mark, as always, wonderful to speak to you. You're doing great work, and I'll look forward to talking to you again before we all end up in Paris.
Great. Well, thank you, Megan. I appreciate the support. Thanks very much.
Want more information on this Green Dude segment and other ideas for low-stress green living? Go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
Looking for low-stress ways to create a healthier, non-toxic environment in your home? The Green Divas make it fun and easy with useful information for making a beautiful and eco-friendly Green Diva home.
Yay! Another Green Divas at Home segment with the beautiful Marcy Zaroff, who is the founder of Under the Canopy. She is an eco-fashion and eco-lifestyle pioneer. She's an artist. She's a yoga girl. She is an entrepreneur. Oh, my gosh. She's very busy, and aren't we glad to have her. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Meg. How are you?
So I love the concept for today's segment. We're talking about farm to bedroom. Like, we all get farm to table now, right? Most of us get
right.
What that means. So what does it mean to bring, you know, natural, sustainably produced products into our home and into our bedroom? You want to talk about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, it is, as you said, you know, it's already apparent that people have embraced the farm to table concept because they want to know, they want to pull the curtain back and they want to know what kind of food they're eating. What are they putting into their bodies? So, you know, looking at the next frontier of that, it's not just what we put in our bodies, but what we put on our bodies. And so when you look at a typical, you know, bedding set and you just want it to be soft and you want it to be of good quality, you know, it's been sort of this disconnect for people to think about, well, what about the fibers? What about what's going into the making of that bedding, right? You know, and I joke oftentimes when I do public speaking that people think that their, you know, their clothing and their bedding is growing in the department store, right? But when you really pull the curtain back, it starts at the farm.
Yeah.
And so most people have cotton bedding, right?
Right.
But what they don't realize is that less than 3% of the world's agriculture is cotton, but 20% of the most harmful insecticides and 10% of the most toxic pesticides are actually used on cotton. And cotton is very heavily processed with chemicals. So when you are actually trying to be transparent about what goes into that bedding that people are sleeping on, it's pretty mind-blowing. So my whole thing is just like that same level of awareness and consciousness that goes into food. We now can say, how do we create, you know, products and bedding to start that is, you know, supporting human and planetary health, right? That you feel good about and that is not just soft to the touch, but that touches you on every level, that you understand it.
Okay, I have soft to the touch segue. Bamboo, some of the most soft fabric in the world is bamboo, and it sounds really exciting because it's so easy to grow, but I understand that to process bamboo into fiber for soft fabric is a very chemical and heavy, you know, heavy footprint process. Is that true?
Yeah. So bamboo has been a poster child of greenwashing. And that's because when you take the what we call the bask fiber of the bamboo, even though bamboo itself is a renewable plant, and if you turn it into furniture or flooring, you don't have to break it down into fiber. So it actually is sustainable still. But to break bamboo and the bask fiber down into a fiber for textiles, for yarn, and then for spinning and knitting and weaving, it actually is an extraordinarily toxic process that emits huge amounts of air and water pollution. And in the end, all that's generally left after the processing of bamboo into fiber is chemicals, just like rayon, right? So it might start at a good source, but at the end of the day, it's just chemicals. So what we use instead of bamboo that has that same luster, that same luscious, yummy, silky, soft hand is something we call eucalyptus.
Yeah.
And eucalyptus is the cellulose from the eucalyptus plant. We extract the cellulose. We break it down with a completely non-toxic solvent that has no chemicals.
Right.
It's manufactured in what we call a closed-loop system, so all the byproducts are used efficiently.
Okay.
And, of course, eucalyptus, like bamboo, is very sustainable. It's grown without water on non-arable land, so you're not taking food crops away.
Right.
So it's a great fiber, and it's 3 times stronger than cotton, grows without water.
I believe I have some sheets that are made from this that I maybe they're from your company, I don't know, but they are like, oh, my God, heaven.
Yeah, they're really soft. So we sell, Under the Canopy sells a blend of 70% certified organic cotton and 30% eucalyptus sheets on bedbathandbeyond.com.
Yeah, that's probably, maybe, well, I got it in the store, but at any rate, I'm an advocate for that is yummy. So, so let's talk about like the cost, not, you know, so for our luxury and our comfort, sometimes we don't realize the cost to farmers maybe that, you know, in countries, a lot of that cotton farming you were talking about that's so toxic takes place not in this country even.
Yeah, well, cotton is one of the leading causes of air and water pollution, and in India, and you could, you know, people can Google this, every half an hour, a conventional cotton farmer is actually committing suicide because the paradigm is just completely non-sustainable and completely broken, where they get lured in by, you know, the GMO seeds and the Roundup, you know, and the chemical insecticides and pesticides, and once they start using that because they're told that it's going to increase their yields, what happens is the bugs eventually build resistance. Man. And then they have to up the ante on the strength of these pesticides. Yeah. And when they do that, it costs more money. It ultimately kills the ecosystem and the soil. The plants get weaker and the bugs come back again, smarter and stronger. And that's where you hear super bugs and super weeds. And the system's breaking down and the farmers are going into despair. And the way that they're committing suicide is they're actually drinking the pesticides. It's a terrible, terrible situation that's going on. 90% of the cotton in India right now, more than 90%, is actually genetically modified. Same with the U.S. So it's really scary because we're risking the, you know, the natural system and the ecosystem of cotton, which is one of the world's most adored fibers. And
so, I mean, and that's just one example of the entire system being, like you said, it's busted. And, you know, people, environment, water systems, you know, everything is being affected. It is not sustainable. And if we think because it's happening in India that it's not happening here or it doesn't affect us, you're wrong. And it, like I said, it's just one example. And I know that, you know, one of the things that you work hard with your company and greater awareness, bringing greater awareness, is that there are better ways to source material that is fair trade, you know, safe, healthier for everybody, right?
Absolutely. In fact, even down to things like that people don't really necessarily think about, like the filling that goes in your pillows and into your comforters, you know, are you generally speaking, if you go to a store, they're generally going to be polyester, which of course burns fossil fuels. We have huge climate change, you know, concerns now and global warming. And we have to start to think about, you know, all of these materials. We have to stop extracting and exploiting our planet, and we have to start creating a model based on a circular economy versus a linear economy.
Yes.
We have to, what we take from the earth, we have to give back to the earth. 5% of landfill space right now is textile waste. So one of the other fibers that we use to stuff our pillows and our comforters is called recycled poly, RPET, which is not polyester that's been recycled.
Yeah.
What it is we're taking plastic bottles out of landfills, breaking them down into a super soft fiber that is then stuffed into these pillows or being reused. And that, there's a company in the U.S. called UNFI that has a fiber called Reprieve, which is recycled plastic bottles. They took 900 million plastic bottles out of the landfills last year.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a huge solution to an environmental crisis of the magnitude of plastic bottles in our landfills, not including all that textile waste.
Well, you know, and it's like they're not going anywhere. So we might as well reuse them, put them to good use, and try to minimize, you know, maximize the life of the whatever this plastic is, a source material, you know, whatever. Yeah, so I love that you and other companies are starting to think innovatively about how to create products that are more sustainable from cradle to grave, as it were.
Yep, absolutely. I'm on the board of the Cradle to Cradles Fashion Positive effort, which is an amazing new vertical under the Cradle to Cradle Innovation Institute that is looking at material health and material reuse, renewable energy, social justice, and it really, you know, it really is a model for, you know, creating a more sustainable future. Because right now, business as usual just can't keep going.
No, not
good for our bodies. It's not good for our planet or our home, and it's not good for our children's futures.
Well, I don't think, you know, manufacturers have always been about the bottom dollar. Like, well, we can get it done in China for, you know, 3 cents a package. You know, well, great. What is the ultimate cost? And we have to start really looking at, like you said, the transparency. What is the ultimate cost here? So We have to wrap this segment up, but obviously we could talk to you all day long about this stuff, and we will talk to you more because there's more for us to learn.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for having me, Meg. And, you know, we're starting, I think the real breakout for this year is, you know, making sustainable products, not about why would you buy them, but why wouldn't you buy them, as long as they're affordable, accessible, and authentic. And that's really been my mantra. So.
Love it. All right. Stay tuned, people. More coming.
Find out more about this Green Divas at Home segment and lots of other great low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green at thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com. Green Divas Heart Wildlife. Who can resist all those videos and images of adorable baby animals? But sometimes these adorable creatures really need our help. Let's celebrate wild animals, learn about them, and do what we can to help them.
Very happy to be speaking again to John Platt, who is a freelance environmental journalist extraordinaire. That's me saying that. But he is. And he's doing a wonderful series called, a little scary series actually, Extinction Countdown through Scientific America, which is getting a lot of attention, and rightfully so. Hi, John.
Hi, Meg.
And, you know, I was looking through some of these articles, and I was like, oh, that's sad. Oh, my gosh, what's happening there? And, yeah. So tell us kind of what I mean, it seems obvious, but tell us what prompted you to work on this series.
Well, I've always been interested in endangered species. I think it's part of who I am and where I, you know, the way I grew up. I grew up outside of Buffalo, not that far from Love Canal. When I was growing up, there were the stories of DDT affecting eagles. Gorillas in the Mist was a huge touch point for me, the movie starring Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, all these things came together. And about 10 years ago, I was working as a technology writer. And I kept coming across all these stories about endangered species that I thought weren't really being covered in the broader media. So I said, well, if no one else is doing it, I better do it myself.
Yeah.
And I started this off as something on my own. It was later picked up by a magazine called Plenty. When they went out of business, Scientific American picked it up. I've been over there for about 6 years. And I just, I could keep writing about this stuff for decades. There's never a lack of stories.
No, sadly, there's not.
No.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing.
And you know, but the more you dig into it, too, I mean, if you look at the public coverage of endangered species, you hear about the same things over and over again. Basically, it's the polar bear. That's what everyone talks about. But there's so much more.
No, and like you're writing about some amazing, amazing old fish. I mean, old species.
Yeah.
And,
I just did an article about the coelacanth, which is that classic, famous creature that everyone thought was extinct. It was only existed in the fossil record. And in the 1930s, one popped up in a fishing net.
Yeah.
And now we know that they're out there. But now, once again, they are actually literally, really, truly this time threatened with extinction. So,
and, you know, and then I saw, like, plants. There's some beautiful purple plant in Hawaii that is endangered.
And it's just been discovered. So there's all these things that we know are endangered. There's a lot of things. There's an awful lot of species out there that we haven't even seen as humans or officially scientifically described. Once we find them, we don't, okay, this Hawaiian plant only exists within a couple of hundred square yards, basically.
Wow.
And one little event and they could be gone.
Well, and then there's that volcano. I mean, if it happens to be anywhere near, is it Kilauea that's going? I can't.
Yeah, know. Yeah.
Well, and have you ever read Douglas Adams?
Oh, of course.
I mean, I'm like such a fan. I'm still mad that he left the planet. But he wrote a wonderful book, which was really kind of out of his normal realm, and it was called Last Chance to See.
Exactly.
And that had to be.
I think that was another book that I read that really influenced the things that I do. And in fact, a lot of people don't realize this, but he did that book and the original BBC radio series with a photographer named Mark Carwardine.
Yes.
And they did a follow-up a couple of years ago that was available as a TV series, another book. Really great stuff.
Yeah, of course, without Douglas Adams.
Yeah.
But it's still important information, and it's just that I happen to be attached to his quirky style.
But, well, how could you not be?
I know. And as I was saying, you know, and this stuff's been going on for a while. This is not new news, because as I was reading your articles and kind of just preparing for this interview, the Joni Mitchell song, Paved Paradise, Put Up a Parking Lot, was racing through my head, you know, Farmer, Farmer, Put Away the DDT Now. And I'm like, you know what? And she sings Save Me the Birds and the Bees Now. And I'm like, yeah, this has been, and that was in the 70s, right?
Absolutely. You know, this is not a new problem, but at the same time, it's probably a worse problem.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. A lot of species face even greater threats than ever before.
Yeah.
But it's also just something we don't talk about enough. It's a tough topic to tackle.
Now, are humans on that list?
Not exactly.
Not exactly. We're too many of us still.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just had to throw that out there. So what, in your research, I know you've got a series going. What is the one that really, really stood out to you, maybe as, like, it really pulled on your heartstrings, like, oh, no, that's, I mean, I know they all do, but is there one that stands out for you that's more shocking or something?
Well, I think I always go down to rhinos. Rhinos are one of those species or groups of species that I can cover several times a year because there's always something going on. They're truly in crisis. They're being murdered solely for their horns.
Now, see, that is so upsetting.
Which is like being killed for your fingernails.
Yeah, yeah.
And the problem just gets worse and worse and worse. And I've been following a species called the northern white rhino for years now. And there are only five left.
Mm.
Five in the world. There's three in Kenya and two in zoos, one in San Diego, one in Europe. They have never successfully bred, or at least these living animals haven't.
Well, they're probably depressed. I mean, come on.
Well, you know, yeah, it's not exactly easy. That's why the last three are in Kenya. They moved a few over there thinking, maybe let's try to get them to breed under their natural sun instead of in zoos. And they've kind of gotten a little bit of breeding activity. But, yeah, it's tough. And, of course, I always go back to orangutans, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're one of the species that got me involved in conservation, and it's one that people really can make a difference on. If you look at the products that you're buying,
palm oil,
food to it's palm oil, exactly. It's in everything. It's in food. It's in makeup. It's in cosmetics. You know, it's in soaps. And if people choose not to buy things with palm oil that can make a difference to the habitat in Sumatra and on Borneo, that impact, you know.
Did you
habitat
see
being cut down for palm oil, and that is the habitat.
Did you
for orangutans
see
and tigers and so many other creatures?
Years of Living Dangerously.
Yeah.
That episode with Harrison Ford where he like just becomes. I mean, I'm like bawling when he's playing with this orang, and he's like crying. You know, I mean, it was just I had no idea this was, and I'm kind of. You know, I just can't retain it all, I guess, but maybe I blocked it out because it's horrifying. But he goes to bat. I mean, he just really gets indignant with these people. Like, you can't be doing this. You just can't do this. And I fell in love with Harrison Ford even more, even though he's crashing his Millennium Falcon into golf courses.
Yeah, not the smartest move on his part, but you can't hold that against him.
No. He's an adventure guy.
But that's the thing. We just need to keep putting things in front of people's heads. And, yes, it's a difficult topic. Yeah, it can make you rage. It can make you cry. But the other thing to do is look beyond that at the work, the good work, the great work that people are doing to conserve these species,
yes,
to study them, to understand them. And these are the heroes. And if you embrace the heroes who are doing great work, it helps you to overcome that feeling of
hopelessness,
feeling of helplessness.
Yeah, I really like that idea, and I know that there are so many things we can do, and I'm pretty sure you're going to share some stuff with us on the blog so people can really easily find out more
Absolutely. It all boils down to personal choices.
Yeah.
Everything you do has an impact.
Yeah. Well, John, I wish we didn't have to cut this particular segment short, but I know you will come back and we will talk
Absolutely.
About more of the, because there's so much to talk about. So thank you for your time, John, and your hard work on this. It's great stuff.
Well, thank you, Meg. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Green Divas Heart Wildlife. Please visit thegreendivas.com, that's T-H-E, greendivas.com, to learn more about wildlife, nature, and a whole lot more.
They were originally built in Denmark, using wind power to turn the massive stones that would grind grain into flour. The windmills of yesterday are creating electric power today. More about that after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order tall grass beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
The earliest windmills date back to early Greeks, who used wind to power a machine. The most famous windmills are, of course, from the Dutch. So it's fitting that Denmark is now the world leader in wind-powered turbines that now provide 25% of its power from offshore wind, and aim to double that to 50% by the year 2020. One of the biggest challenges, in fact, is that Denmark is producing more energy than it needs, and actually has had to sell off surplus energy to neighboring countries of Norway and Sweden. Can the United States follow the lead of Denmark? The answer, my friends, is blowing in the wind. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
Wow, this is such an honor for me. I'm a fangirl today. And, you know, not everybody appreciates what it is to be a publisher or to run a media company, but I do. And I have been a fan of Rodale's for many years and the publications and the kind of work that they do and the mission they stand for. But Maria Rodale in particular, I've been kind of following her along, and so I'm so excited I finally get a chance to speak to Maria Rodale, who is the CEO, the chairman of Rodale's, but she's also an activist, an author, and she's passionate about soil, growing healthy things, sustainable living in many ways. Hi, Maria.
Hi. Thank you so much. It's so nice to meet you over the phone.
Yeah.
On the radio, over the radio.
It's how it starts so often for me. So you've got a lot of going on. Now, people will hear this in a few days, but today you are launching. You have a big launch going on today. You want to tell folks what that's about?
Yeah, today is the official launch date of Rodale's Organic Life, which is kind of the next generation of magazine based on the longtime success of organic gardening and the organic movement in America. So my grandfather founded the organic movement in 1942 and with Organic Gardening magazine. But now, like, organic is about so much more than just growing things. It's about
right.
a whole way of life, a lifestyle. It's your home, you know, your health, your environment, your well-being, and, of course, food. It's
yeah.
all about food.
Yeah, it's all about
so,
food.
So it's on the newsstands now, and it's a beautiful, beautiful magazine edited by Jim Osland, who was the former editor-in-chief of Savoir magazine. So it's
nice.
Beautiful and amazing.
Oh, well, I can't wait to get my hands on it. And Because, you know, you and I were chatting a bit before we started recording about, because the whole magazine addiction thing that, you know, it is. It's in my blood. But there's still nothing like really savoring a well-done magazine.
Yeah, Jim, I love the way he talks about it. He talks about it as the equivalent of, the slow food movement, what slow food has done for, you know, just got getting everybody to relax and enjoy, you know, the act of eating and communing together.
Yeah.
That's what a print magazine does for all of us.
Right. You're not hunched over your phone flipping through or staring at a computer screen. Hopefully you got your feet up, you know, and you're like chilling in your garden on your back deck or something.
Yeah, or on your couch and just relaxing.
Yeah. So congratulations, and I'm really excited to see it, and you know, hopefully, you know, that we'll be able to participate on some level as things evolve. You never know. And in the meantime, we're also coming up on Earth Day, which, you know, it's every day is Earth Day, you know, but we got to take this opportunity, you know, folks like you and I, to use the platforms we have to shout it out, especially this coming week, right?
Right, right.
So I know you have something really interesting that you're working on for Earth Day that I love the sound of. Will you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's called Earth Gratitude Wave. And I had kind of an epiphany right before Thanksgiving. You know, Thanksgiving is such a wonderful holiday because everybody stops, goes home, you know, eats turkey or turkey substitute and, you know, feels grateful for each other.
Right.
And I was thinking, you know, it's too bad that, like, the Earth doesn't have the same kind of holiday where just everybody just says thanks, you know, because the truth is we're all, you know, no matter what our political or religious or, you know, you know, food likes or dislikes, we're all completely dependent on the Earth.
Yeah.
And there's so much noise out there and bickering and fighting about what's right and what's wrong.
Right.
And who, you know, are we in trouble or aren't we? And, you know, it's like at the end of the day, the most important thing is we take that moment and say,
thank you.
And even if it's just, you know, privately, you don't have to. But, you know, we do have a hashtag, Earth Gratitude.
Earth Gratitude.
We're hoping to get kind of like a global wave going for, you know, of gratitude for the Earth on Earth Day, because Earth Day is already a great holiday. We don't need a new holiday. We just need to build off of the great holiday that we already have and add some gratitude to the mix.
Well, you know, you can never go wrong with gratitude. I love it.
Exactly.
And that's what when I saw the Earth Gratitude Wave idea, I thought, oh, I really like that, because it is one thing that we can all agree on, because even, you know, sometimes the most conservative of people that maybe they don't necessarily believe in climate change or the politics around it, but a lot of them will still go to a mountain or a lake or stream.
Yeah, they'll go fishing.
And they,
you know, and the truth is oil and coal come from the Earth too.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know.
Whatever it takes, man, just use gratitude.
And gratitude also has a lot of health benefits too to the individual. You know, so it's definitely shown to make you healthier and happier and even sleep better.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. I know. One year, my sister, she didn't have a lot of money that year, but she gave us all these little notepads and a little tiny book and a pen about gratitude. Mm-hmm. And we were supposed to just write, you know, I've been doing the gratitude thing for years, but it does seem revolutionary to people that aren't familiar with it. And it really does help, I don't know, change my attitude almost instantly.
Yeah.
If I'm feeling kind of, and I realize, like, wait a minute, you know, and I start listing out the things in my head that are really good that I'm grateful for, everything else kind of fades away.
Yeah, and, you know, we all need air to breathe. We all, you know, need the earth to stand on and to bring us, you know, food for our table, no matter what kind of food it is. It's all important.
It is. So What else is coming up for Rodale's? I mean, this has got to be big, this magazine thing, right?
Well, what I really love about it also is, you know, a few years ago I launched an e-commerce site called Rodale's, which every product in it is either organic or completely healthy and safe. It doesn't have any, you know, any bad chemicals in it. So, you know, whether it's personal care products or clothing or kitchen products. And so we've been really excited to see that taking off. And what's also exciting is Organic Life kind of starts with right out of the gate with its own store that's connected to Rodale's. So the editors have curated products, especially, you know, for the Rodale's Organic Life customer. And it's everything from, you know, gardening products to kitchen to clothing and books. And so,
well,
you know,
and
we
I
have
know,
that capacity now.
You see, I know, and you're a trusted name. And, like, and I know I would feel good because I know you do your homework and I know you understand the depth of what makes something clean and healthy. And
exactly.
So I think it's a wonderful idea because, you know, there's a lot of places to go, but you're like, really? I'm like, you know, and that's part of, I'm sure what you're doing, but I know what we do with the Green Divas is we, like you said, you use the word curate, you know, and people come to us like, well, what would you use on your face?
Right. Yeah. I wanted to create a place where people could come where they know we've done all the homework and the vetting and, you know, they can trust us so they can just, like, enjoy the pleasure of shopping.
Thank you,
yes. They don't have to, like, put their glasses on and read the fine print. We've done that.
Yeah, exactly.
If it doesn't pass our standards, it doesn't get into the store.
Right. Now, so you were kind of born into this, but I know that you have a passion for this. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like to grow up Rodale?
Yeah, I mean, very early on, it was very idyllic, and I thought everybody kind of lived like that because, you know, it was we lived on a farm, and there were, like, baby pigs being born all the time and kittens in the barn and, you know, hay bales to make forts out of. And you know,
right. You're a farm girl.
You know, and, like, great food. You know, my my parents, you know, we weren't vegetarians. We ate, you know, steak and potatoes and salad, but it was all from the garden. And you know, and then as you get older and start to see, okay, other people don't live like this, and for some reason they're making fun of me,
you know?
It gets a little challenging.
That's not right.
But you know what happens is, you know, we all grow up, and then you have to kind of choose.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, it wasn't just an overnight thing. It was a continual process of choosing, and then also comparing, you know, so I didn't just stay organic. You know, I tried Captain Crunch cereal.
Right.
And
right.
It gave me a bad taste in my mouth. So, you know, I was like, okay, this is overrated.
Yep.
So,
it's interesting.
And, you know, now my kids, you know, I give them the freedom to choose as well. And, and I'm happy to say they all choose organic. Even my littlest, she's like, she eats a salad in a restaurant, and she's like, this isn't organic. I can tell.
Yeah.
I can tell.
You go, girl. See, I don't know how old my kids, my baby's now 22, and my oldest is 30 and lives with us, and my middle one's 29 or something. And I know I'm supposed to know exactly, but I get a little confused sometimes. Anyway.
That's okay.
When they were little, you know, I was like making their almond milk because you couldn't buy it in a box. And I fed them all organic and we belonged to, you know, whatever. I did all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I did choose to kind of let them make choices because they go to school and they come back with a candy bar and you're like, what? Mm-hmm. And I'm really gratified to say that they came around. They all are they crave healthy food. My daughter from college comes home, I need vegetables.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's part of what Organic Life magazine is about, is like it's starting wherever you are. Everybody's welcome. There's no, you know, black and white, like this is the right way and this is the wrong way.
Right.
It's a very open and warm and friendly kind of approach
it is.
To the
it's
organic life.
Very accessible and smart. And like I said, there's a trustworthy factor, a sort of credibility factor where you're like, oh, okay, there's some science in here that's on the basis of, you know, these people have been doing it a long time.
A very long time.
I hope that we get to talk again. And I'm looking forward to seeing the magazine. And hopefully we'll meet up somewhere between Pennsylvania and New York.
That would be great. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's THE greendivas.com.